You know, all of us are on a journey, probably more than just one. We're on a journey to graduate from kindergarten, from middle school or high school or college or med school, dental school. We're on a journey to meet someone special, someone who will whisk us away on a magical adventure. We're on a journey to raise a family and for all in our family to have straight teeth and straight A's. We're on a journey to experience success in our vocation, to be respected in our field. We're on a journey to own a home and start an IRA and begin a college fund. We're on a journey to lose weight, to get fit, to go from couch to 5K. I think I'm on a journey to grow a ponytail. So I keep asking Mary, can I do it yet? But no, not yet. We're on a journey to maybe overcome an addiction, to mend a relationship, to find a friend. We're on a journey to know God and to be known by Him and to follow, to trust and to listen. We're all on a journey. Everybody's going somewhere. And today I want you to see what a few stages look like for these journeys that we're on. We'll be focusing on Israel's journey from Egypt to the Promised Land, as well as Moses' journey from the palace to being Israel's general. But one thing we all know, we've learned this early on, rarely is our journey easy or straight or predictable. Our journeys don't go as planned, they don't finish on time, they don't cost what we budgeted, and they may not even take us where we expected. So I'm going to describe four stages on Israel's journey, and I found some insightful guidance about these stages from Ruth Haley Barton's book, Strengthening the Soul of Your Leadership. It's a book that's focused on just Moses' style of leadership and what he learned and what God taught him over the years. The first stage is called pre-awareness, and it's exactly like what it sounds. We're at a place where we don't know. We just aren't aware. Where it's like being excited to finally bring the baby home, whether by adoption or by birth, and then over time you realize this is much harder than you expected. You didn't have any idea. You were pre-aware. It's like being excited for your wedding date, and it finally arrives, and then the day is magical, but then the honeymoon ends, and you're together all the time, 24/7, and you didn't have any idea how hard this would be. You were pre-aware. Or maybe you're headed off to college, and you experience the freedom and the fun and all the new people to meet and the late nights and the later mornings and not much studying, and then the first round of test hits, and they're a lot more difficult than you expected. You didn't have any idea. You were pre-aware. When we pick up the story of the Israelites living in Egypt, they didn't give much thought to the bondage that they were in. They weren't aware that there might be something more, something better for them. They weren't aware that this isn't as good as it gets. And why would they think this way? Well, Exodus 1 describes their situation like this. The Israelites were fruitful, and they multiplied greatly and became exceedingly numerous, so the land was filled with them. They had no thoughts of experiencing anything outside of their current condition. And Israel stayed in this relationship as Egypt's slave labor for 430 years. But to them, life seemed to be good. Plenty of food, large families, supportive community. Similar to Moses' life in the palace. I mean, why would he be concerned about anything? He had everything he wanted and so much more. Adopted by Pharaoh, respected by his peers, living the dream. Moses was the guy all the other guys wanted to know. He was simply not aware. Israel's situation was not on his radar. And if Moses had stayed in the palace, he might never have become aware of what was going on outside the palatial walls among his relatives. Out of sight, out of mind. It's so easy to live a life of pre-awareness. It's easy for us to go to church and to practice the sacraments, communion and baptism. And we're doing what we think we should. And we live a life that's better than most. And we're considerate of others. So what we do is we get lulled into believing that moderation is good for the soul. A little bit of Jesus is good to round out our lives. Or maybe you're living out this pre-awareness stage in your dating world. This guy is nice to you. He treats you well. He's not like the other guys that you've been with in the past, so you think being nice may be enough. You don't give much thought to him not being a Jesus guy or that you two are not on the same spiritual journey. You don't see how things could be any better. You're pre-aware. Maybe your work culture is going well. It's not perfect, but it's working. You get drawn into complaining about management like everybody else, and you get drawn into bad-mouthing a few coworkers, and there's some unhealthy amounts of competition and some unwholesome conversation. Nothing to be alarmed with. It's just the way most things in most offices are. Maybe we grow complacent about social issues, like racism. You think, this doesn't impact me. I'm not a racist. I'm nice to everybody I meet. Or you take the topic of sex trafficking. You know, you're really not concerned about that pornography in your life. It's not like it's hurting anyone and or involving anybody you know. So you don't consider that this person on your screen doesn't want to be there. You don't think about the likelihood that they're there because of addiction or poverty or desperation. You don't think about the person on your screen being somebody's daughter, somebody's sister. The motto for pre-awareness stage is this: I'm good, so let's keep going. There's no need to change anything. And this pre-awareness can go on for a long time because most of us don't really want to change. We're not eager to change. We like comfort. We like the way things are. We like life as we know it. The unknown and the unfamiliar is not alluring. We don't get the feeling that something might need to change. Or when we do get the feeling that something might need to change, we're quick to set that feeling aside or rationalize our way back to the status quo or get really busy so we don't have time to think about it. We don't want to rock the boat. But then something happens and we're awakened, which is the next step on the journey to the promised land. And we're going to call it awareness. For Moses, it happened when he left the palace and saw how his brothers were being treated by the Egyptian slave drivers. Here's how it happened for Israel in verse 1 of Exodus chapter 8, or chapter 1, verse 8. Then a new king who did not know about Joseph came to power in Egypt. "Look," he said to his people, "the Israelites have become much too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous. And if war breaks out, they will join our enemies and fight against us and leave the country." So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor. And the oppression multiplied, and their fear increased. And the new Pharaoh grew concerned with the increasing population of these Israelites, and he issued an order to kill all the baby boys. Now, for Israel, it was nearly impossible to stay unaware. The way things are won't work any longer. And here's what's interesting to see in the first few chapters of Exodus. You have these parallel journeys being described, the journey toward awareness for Israel and the journey toward awareness for Moses. And Moses was going through his own process of becoming aware that life for Israel, it couldn't stay the same. His effort to remedy the situation didn't go so well. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. And he wound up running away to the desert to hide. Ruth Barton has this quote that fits real well here. Not only was Moses running away from his sin found out, but he was also running away from the responsibility that increased awareness inevitably brings. Out of sight, out of mind. But that's what we do, isn't it? If we can hide our eyes to the truth, then we can deny any responsibility to address it. Denial is less painful than awareness. The phrase I've heard is this: not my circus, not my monkeys. You know, I felt regret in my life in those moments when I've chosen to sidestep difficult conversations. It happened at times when doing premarital counseling earlier on in my ministry, and I had regret for things I didn't say. I would see a potential problem, but considered how difficult it would be to bring it up. And bringing this up might be hurtful to somebody, or I might lose a relationship with a couple, or lose the opportunity to have a voice down the road. So I chose not to say anything. Denial was less painful than awareness. As we move into this awareness stage, we hopefully become willing to address the truth. We become willing to take the risk and take some responsibility. The pain of staying the same becomes greater than the pain of changing. And we're beginning to catch a vision for something better, a healthier communication in our marriage, freedom from an addiction, life without so many lies to keep up with, a life of being real, of getting help, of serving others. And all kinds of outside forces are used by God to trigger our awareness. A timely conversation with a friend who says just the right thing, just what I needed to hear. Or maybe a line from a book that hits us right between the eyes. Perhaps it's a God-prompted, affirming sign from somewhere you didn't see coming. And we become aware because God is at work. It's his initiative. Here's a line from Jesus which plays into this stage. In John 12:32, Jesus makes this comment. He says, "When I am lifted up, I will draw all men to myself." And this drawing is all about making us aware of who he is and what he does and how deeply he loves us. We can't help but look his way. And life will never be the same once we become aware, regardless of what we choose. But we will have to choose something. And so that creates a turning point, the next stage on the journey to the promised land. The question is, what will we do with what we now know? Now that my eyes have been opened, what will I do? A turning point for Moses came at the burning bush. He had to choose. What will he do with what he now knows? The turning point for Israel came when Moses and Aaron called all the leaders of Israel together and told them what the Lord had said to Moses. Aaron told them that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had seen their misery. He understands the oppression that they are experiencing. Aaron told them about God's plan. He told them about the message Pharaoh is to receive. He told them about how Pharaoh will be compelled to agree with God's demands. And he told them about how the Egyptians will give their gold and silver on their way out the door to the Israelites. This was a turning point. What will these leaders do now with what they know? What are they going to do with this new awareness? In Exodus chapter 4, verse 29, we get to see that. Moses and Aaron brought together all of the elders of the Israelites, and Aaron told them everything the Lord had said to Moses. He also performed the signs before the people, and they believed. And when they heard that the Lord was concerned about them and had seen their misery, they bowed down and they worshiped. So here's what they chose to do with what they now know. Their turning point moment. They believed, they bowed down, and they worshiped. Israel allowed themselves to believe a better day and a better life was on the horizon. A day free of bondage. A day with no slave drivers. A day with no brick quotas. A day to worship their God. Martin Luther King Jr. shared his dream of a world where black children and white children live together in equality. No more segregation. No more injustice. And others caught that dream. It was a turning point, and people were forced to choose. Many of us can identify specific turning points in our lives. Moments when we made the first move toward reconciling a relationship, forgiving a lost friend, rekindling a broken marriage, or reuniting with a prodigal daughter. We know of moments when we first stepped out of an addiction, we admitted helplessness, and we sought out some accountability. We released illusions we were clinging to and lies we had embraced. Some of you in our Southside family made the difficult decision to try out a new church. You reached a point where you believed something for you needed to change, and you landed here. Some of you have followed through on an opportunity to living out a truer self, living out an identity rooted in Jesus, and letting go of the expectations of others or the demands of an ill-perceived God figure. Some of you have chosen to release a performance-based religion and embrace grace, which has set you free to grow and to follow and change like never before. I remember sitting at a table with several college guys a few years ago over here at the new K-Layer, and I was the one who was supposed to be connecting with them and leading them and coaching them on their spiritual journey. But as I sat at that table, it was mostly fellas at that table, I realized that about 80% of what they were talking about, I had no idea. I didn't understand their language. I didn't understand their illustrations. I didn't understand their concerns. I had little opportunity to join the conversation in a meaningful way like I had done in the past. And that was a turning point for me. It was time to consider a different path, more for their sake than for mine. We've all experienced these turning point moments, moments which change the course of our lives, moments which change who we are and what we believe and in whom we believe. So if you're keeping score at home, here's what we covered so far. The first stage is pre-awareness, when we say, I'm good, so leave me alone. The second stage is awareness, discovering a reality, either new or existing, one which kind of pulls you in a certain direction. The third stage is this turning point. What will you do with what you now know? And the next stage, let's call this the roundabout way of God. Here's what happens next for Israel. Exodus 12, verse 31. During the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, Up or go, leave my people, You and the Israelites, go and worship the Lord as you've requested. Take your flocks and herds as you have said and go. And here's an interesting line. And also bless me. That'd be kind of cool to think about it for a little bit. The Egyptians urged the people to hurry and leave the country, for otherwise, they said, we will all die. So the people took their dough before the yeast was added and carried it on their shoulders in kneading troughs wrapped in clothing. The Israelites did as Moses instructed and asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and for clothing. And the Lord had made the Egyptians favorably disposed toward the people, and they gave them what they asked for. So they plundered the Egyptians on their way out the door. Just think how the Israelites felt as they paraded out of Egypt, leaving behind those brick quotas and looking at Pharaoh in the rearview mirror. And I love this part. They were loaded down with all the valuables that they plundered from the Egyptians. What a time to be alive. 430 years of captivity and slavery and bondage, all behind them as they shake the Egyptian dust from their sandals. This is the stage I want to spend the rest of our time considering this morning. The roundabout way. Look at Exodus 13. Here's what happens then. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. For God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert toward the Red Sea. God had a two-step plan. Step one, bring the people of Israel out of Egypt. Step two, lead them to the land flowing with milk and honey. Now, there was a direct route to get to this destination, a shot straight from Egypt to the Promised Land. It's the red line on the map. But that's not the route they traveled. They definitely went the roundabout way. I'll give you an example. It seems like around here, by the number of people who've left our church family here at Southside and moved, it sounds to me like Nashville is the Promised Land. And there's a fairly straight shot to get to Nashville. You go west on the Bluegrass Parkway for about an hour, and then you go south on 65 for a couple hours. You don't have to turn your wheel very much. It's just a pretty easy trip. But that's not the route God took. Instead, God takes us this route. We head down 75 to Knoxville, then we go over to Chattanooga, and from there we take 59 south to Birmingham, where we hit 65 north and head up to Nashville. That's what happened to the Israelites on the way to the Promised Land. This roundabout way was not the quickest. It was probably not what they expected. I mean, what happens when the fire starts going the wrong way, leading them to the desert of all places? That's the last place they wanted to go. And the question arises, will the people follow when it doesn't make any sense? One thing you learn about God if you hang around him for very long, he never seems to be in a hurry. It's not his style. And did you catch the reason for taking the turn toward the desert? God, in Exodus 13, says, God did not lead them on the road to the Philistine country, though that was shorter. God was aware of that. For he said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. Because of his kindness, God wanted Israel to experience freedom for a time as they march out of Egypt. He led them on the roundabout way so they would not be overcome by discouragement right at the start. This is like a rebuilding team or a team at the beginning of the season scheduling a lesser opponent. I mean, you don't want to play Clemson in August. You don't want to play Villanova in November. The roundabout way to the championship goes through Eastern Michigan and Transy to build confidence, to ward off discouragement. It's God's hesed. It's his mercy in action, his loving kindness on display. The roundabout way is not the most direct route, but it is the best way to experience God's presence, like the cloud by day and the fire by night. By taking Israel on the roundabout way, they were protected from challenges they weren't ready to face. Their dependence on God was being developed, and we begin to realize God is not in any hurry. He's not in any hurry to get us to the Promised Land, and he's more concerned in our transformation along the journey than he is in the destination. People who are watching from the sidelines may think we are wandering around aimlessly, but God knows what he is doing. Besides not being in a hurry, the roundabout way which takes us through the desert seems to be an important part of our journey. I mean, Israel spent 40 years in the desert for a two-week trip. Moses spent 40 years in the desert to lead them on this 40-year desert journey. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with spending time in the desert on your roundabout journey. It may have started the day your dreams died and part of you with it. It might have been a season of not finding the answer you were looking for in your prayers. But you learn God has not forgotten you. And you learn that He's at work in this roundabout way. You're not wandering aimlessly. You learned how He shapes your soul in the desert. So those are a few ideas about a way to view this journey we're on. What might be helpful is for us to set aside some time to consider where we are, you know, on this journey with God. Are you at a pre-awareness stage? You know, you're thinking, life is good. Why mess up a good thing? Who wouldn't want to be me, you might think. Maybe that's where you are. You're just kind of going with the flow. But some of you have been rattled, maybe by our current situation. There's something you've realized about yourself since you've been forced from your routine. And God is holding up a mirror, and He's making you aware. And He's letting you see what He sees, and what you see isn't so attractive. And the changes you're looking at beyond the mirror, it sure looks like a lot of hard work. And this awareness brings you to a turning point. What will you do with what you now know? Will you duck and run, or will you stick around and see what might happen? Will you give this awareness your sincere attention? And if you do give it a go, are you willing to trust the journey, the roundabout way? Are you willing to head north when heading south seems to make more sense? Are you willing to be still in the desert? Are you even willing to end up at a place you never expected? It took one day to get Israel out of Egypt. It took 40 years to get Egypt out of Israel. So give them some thought as we sing this next song, and then as Michael walks us through our communion time together.